Mr. President, professors and students of the Department of Philosophy, ladies and gentlemen, I am glad that we have passed safely through the tunnel of darkness yesterday. I congratulate you that you have accompanied and ventured to come with me through these valleys of darkness, or rather ignorance, of those who were outside the valley. But we thought we should just enter into it and just see what it is contained in the valley, and we found that there are also lampposts in the tunnels also, and some of them so bright as Protanus, and you say as Augustine. I do not know whether you have caught the point that some of them were caught between two dazzling lights, and they were unable to proceed this way or that way. This was especially the case with St. Thomas Aquinas. He thought he should linger with Aristotle, and he thought that he should go forward. A man who wishes to go forward and just to keep himself with people who have gone will be stationary. Similarly, I found that St. Thomas Aquinas, for example, in spite of his great excellence, so far as reason was concerned, had made no progress. Just as St. Aquinas and St. Anselm could do. Now, as we have come out of this tunnel, we need not look back, but let us also go forward. And we come to what is known as the modern period, which commences from Descartes to Kant. And afterwards tomorrow, and afterwards we can go to the post-Kantian and the pre-Hegelian and the Hegelian, post-Hegelian philosophies afterwards. It's a long way, no doubt, when we shall come to what is known as the lighthouses. We are just in the middle of our stream of thought. The modern philosophy is usually considered begins with Descartes. Now, personally, I feel that it ought to begin with Francis Bacon. And there is some ground for that. Francis Bacon we do not have a dividing attention to Francis Bacon on the one hand and Descartes on the other. Both have their good points. Francis Bacon, thinks that he has invented a novum organum, a new instrument of knowledge. Just at that time, the inductive science was coming. And Francis Bacon wanted to make use of that, the inductive methods in logic, meaning thereby that he was not satisfied, it appears, with the deductive method which Aristotle invented, with the deductive logic, though Aristotle was considered the father of logic. He thought that he should be in the company of those who have invented the methods of science, especially the inductive methods, observation and experiment. But he too, like St. Thomas Aquinas, was just between the two stools. On one hand, he could not forget Aristotle. And on the other hand, he could not just go with the new inventors or the new methods in science. So he says, that is why we find in his career a trend of things which goes from Aristotle and goes back again to Aristotle and along with the new scientists who depended upon observation and experiment as the two sources of knowledge, as the novum organum, as the new instrument of knowledge. Unless you observe what is going on in nature. Unless you make experiments with what you observe, you cannot come to a conclusion which will be safe in your hands, and unless you employ the inductive method. This was the gist of the Baconian, you see, teachings to us. As against this, there was Descartes in the field. And we consider, and especially, and they are right, no doubt, that they consider Descartes as the founder of modern philosophy. But it's not on account of the instrument, but on account of a new method which he has started. Descartes, they should be complimented for having a new method. It's not a new instrument, you see. Bacon has adopted the new instrument. But Descartes, René Descartes must be, we must be thankful to him for discovering a methodology. How you use the instrument, that is important. So Descartes had his new method. It's for the first time that people thought of a method. If you do not know the method, just like the student, for example, reading in all through his life, from the beginning to the end of his college career, he may not gather. A rolling stone gathers no mass. Similarly, a student who reads and then keeps nothing in his mind, has no methodology, doesn't know how to study, is not intelligent enough to understand the method. Then, of course, let him read for 20 hours a day, and he will not be on par with another student who reads for 2 hours a day, but with method. So it is the method that counts, which Descartes said to us, and he invented the method, which is known, you see, as the Cartesian method of doubt. He began to doubt everything in the world, as you know. Students of philosophy must be doing this. I am not revising the philosophy as a whole. I am interested in knowing how the thread of spiritual knowledge went through Descartes. For that purpose, I have to refer to his method. Otherwise, if I just omit it, just as I omitted several things of importance in the two lectures of yesterday and day before yesterday, I cannot omit his method for this purpose, that unless we understand his method, we cannot understand the thread of the spiritual knowledge involved in Descartes. Why did he think of God at all? That is the problem. Why did he not omit reference to God? And it is for this purpose, because that he has a method in hand. His method was that he doubted everything else in the world. Not only that, he doubted himself and said, am I made of glass? Is there any bones or flesh in me or not? Am I made of glass? And that, of course, if you can just see yourself, you will don't know. Am I made of glass? Yes. And he said about himself. But by chance he came upon a great discovery. Namely, in doubting I am, he says. Yes, after all, it is I, Descartes, who is doubting. But I am conscious of myself that I am doubting and not anybody else is doubting. So that is what he said, in doubting I am. The cogito ergo sum, as it is said. Cogito means I think. Therefore I think, therefore I am. He came to that conclusion. Namely, the first great thing which he discovered in the sphere of philosophy was that the self exists. Descartes at least exists. Let not the whole world exist, but Descartes will exist. So he said that I am sure of one thing, which is that Descartes exists, that his ego exists, the self exists. Whoever will think will exist. That is the meaning. Not only Descartes, but whoever will think will exist. Doubting involves the doubter. So cogito ergo means therefore sum, means asmi, I am. In thinking I am, in doubting I am. You cannot escape this I, this ego, this self. It is certain, the bedrock of all thinking. You cannot think if you have no ego. So the starting point of all his philosophy is the certainty of the selfhood in man. The selfhood in man. Then that's all right. Why did he stop at it? He looked inside first and found that there was the ego of man, which is absolutely certain. Nobody can think without being certain of himself as the thinker. Then he went and thought, why do I think? Then there is another conception in Descartes which is bound with this, namely the idea, innate idea, that is the natural idea, the inborn idea, born with the mind. He thought, what is this self? Just as I think in this wood, there are sticks in this plank of wood. And I found that they are there along with the wood. You can't tear them out and have a plank of wood without these tricks. So he just saw into his mind and he found that there's a number of ideas. Innumerable ideas are there. Some of them being born with the mind. And then he made a catalogue of these ideas and found that the supreme idea, the innate idea born with the mind, was the idea of God. He could not know. So the idea of God was found implied in the certainty of the self. If you allow self to be real, then you must allow God to be real. So God becomes a derivative principle. God is a corollary from the theorem, namely the self exists. The self exists along with its tides. The sea exists along with its waves. Similarly, the family exists along with the members of the family. Otherwise, there will be no sense in saying that it is a family. If there is one man, then you can't speak of it. You must have children, you must have wife, and you must have relatives, and then you can speak of the wife. If you can have an idea of family as a starting point, you must have also the idea of the members of the family also. Similarly, if you have the idea of self, he says there must be the idea of God along with it. Meaning, the idea of God is contained in the self. You see. And that he has taken out. And he says God is nothing but a corollary. Just as you say the square on the hypotenuse is equal to the sum of the two squares on the two sides. And it's all right. But how do you prove it? You have fallen upon that, upon some other previous idea. And in that way, to the first idea. In that way, you make a start, but with the starting there is this idea. You begin with the race. You start with the race, but the idea is that you have to win the race. That is there, even at the starting point. All start, 20% start in the race of running. And the 20%, if you ask them, what have you, why do you run? Oh, I want to become the first in the race. I want to come. That idea is there even at the start. The end is at the start. So if you ask the question to Vekate, why do you? Yes, what have you attained by self? You do not know. There is God in it. The idea of God in it is implied in the acceptance of self as the starting point. So God becomes of a secondary importance. The first primary importance being self. I think you have understood this, that he refers to God not as the first. He looks inside first, then upwards, and then I'm not concerned with the third, namely because in God also there is an implied idea, namely of the nature outside. So Descartes looks to him within himself, the introspection. And in introspection he finds that he cannot escape the certainty of the self. And then in that certainty he finds God implicitly there, he is present there from the very beginning. And then he accepts God also as a certainty. And the third certainty will be of nature, outside. So Descartes looks inside first, upwards afterwards, and outside afterwards. Whether this is correct, whether this is the proper method of life, of philosophy or not, we are not concerned for the present. Of course it is not, you say. Some may say, why? We shall know thyself. Socrates has said long ago. Is it not the same thing here? It is same thing here, no doubt. But Socrates had no method. Socrates had no end. Look thyself, that's all right. It's only a dogma which was not verified and verifiable at all. But here we can see that we can agree with Descartes that if we look inside, we shall be aware of ourselves in a dim way. We shall be saying, yes, there is no Jodhpur, there is no Rajasthan, there is no India, no. We can have that, but we cannot have this. I am real. Mr. Date so and so is real. In spite of the whole world being unreal. This is the certainty which Descartes had. And therefore, he found that the road to God lies through the self. You see, this was the point which is important in Descartes. Now, which method has he used this year? He was a well-versed and a great mathematician, was he? Naturally, he used the mathematical method. Of something being granted, something will follow. So, this mathematical method was used by Descartes. That something must follow from something which is taken for granted. He didn't take for granted the certainty of the self. He found that it was absolutely necessary. None can think without the acceptance of the self. And afterwards he found that God is implied there already, you see. Just as you, in a vegetable, for example, matar ke dane. You put them already, and if you think they are there, you see, in every sweetmeat the sugar is there. You see, you can't escape sugar in all the sweetmeats. So that when you start with any sweetmeat, kind of sweetmeat, then you need not think of sugar as being brim sugar. No, it is there already involved. So that accepting the self, you accept the God automatically. Must accept it. That is what Descartes taught us. Once this method was going on, it doesn't mean that Descartes was against Bacon, that he didn't use the inductive method. Yes, he might have used it, but the primary motive was to have a method. How to use them? Let us start. Descartes will remember forever for his methodology. It is he who has taught us the method, neither anyone before it. No method was there. It was only strokes of imagination here and there, and the conglomeration of them was called philosophy. Neither there was any method in Plato, nor in Aristotle, nor in anybody else. There was no method at all, you see. There was no doubt insight, but there was no method. A man may be intelligent, but if he has no method, he will lag behind. It is a method which will supplant the need of intelligence many a time. So that was Descartes' virtue, that he used a method for the first time. And then the road was clear for the followers. When he used the mathematical method, then Spinoza came also with his, why? Why should we have only a mathematical method? I shall use a method which will be surer, which will be more certain than Spinoza and Descartes' method, and use what is known as the geometrical method. And the geometry starts with definitions. As you know, a point is that which has no position, which has no magnitude but position. You start with the definition. If you doubt it, then there will be no geometry at all. What is a line? It is nothing but the meeting, you see, of two straight lines. It is the meeting point of two straight lines. If they cut each other, that is the point, that is the mathematical point. Can you see it? No, we cannot see it. It is an ideal point of view. We can understand it conceptually. We cannot have it on the blackboard. If you want to have it on the blackboard, then it will have certain dimension, you see. Whatever the point, whatever the little dimension, infinitesimal, it will have a dimension if you have it on the blackboard. But you have to show it to another, so that as an aid to understanding, that this is the point where the two lines intersect, you see, whether they bisect. That point is known as the mathematical point. Sir, it is in the blackboard. It is not in the blackboard. It should be in your head. You have grasped the idea or not. That is the mathematical point. And Spinoza says, it is this which we have learned first. Define. Just as Socrates said, define your words. Spinoza also wants your definitions first. And then he has altogether a different solution
for the discovery of God. He begins with God. It is a case of petitio principi. That is what you have to conclude, what you have to say in conclusion, you accept it at the start. You see, if you go to a rich man's house, then do you expect coarse bread and sour water, buttermilk? You expect some sweet meat. In that way, Spinoza expects us all to have God at the start and God at the end. If you start with these definitions, there is no way to go out. If you start with the Euclidean definitions of geometry, there is no way to get out of the Euclidean net. It is not. You start with definitions of, you can say, of every definition, of what is meant by rhombus, what is meant by parallelogram, what is meant by square, what is meant by... And then there is no escape. You have to accept all the corollaries, all the exercises upon all this. You have to accept them all. Similarly, he says, why should we start with that doubting mind? We should start with definitions of words which we use. And he substance, he says. And a brilliant definition, I don't think anybody can surpass the definition of Spinoza. Spinoza was a Jew, you see, and Jews were hated.